We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast presented by WinBet. Check out winbet.com for all of your sports wagering needs. In just a second, I'll be joined by Kenny Ducey, who makes his second appearance on the podcast. He and I just got off the air doing the DraftKings morning show, so we're going to keep it rolling. Talk more Bucks-Suns, game one. Less than ideal outcome for the Milwaukee Bucks last night, who finally had a great three-point shooting game, but still lost by double digits despite hitting 16 threes, despite Giannis Antetokounmpo suiting up, starting, playing pretty well in that game. So we'll dig into game one, look ahead to game two tomorrow night, and then finish out with a look at the newly released regular season MVP odds for 2021-22. Those are up on the DraftKings Sportsbook. For the second straight season, Luka Doncic opens as the betting favorite, but it's a really deep field once again. I mean, legitimately 10 or 12 guys that could take home that award. So we'll dig into all the possibilities. It was great to chat with Kenny again. He has some really interesting thoughts on the finals and just how the rest of that series might play out. Full disclosure, we did find our way into some Damian Lee talk toward the end of the podcast, so make sure you stick around for that. But without further ado, let's get to Kenny.
In the hands of Waiters, 3 seconds left for three in the win. Yes! Dion has done it! I watched Marcus Morris handling the ball like he was a point guard. I watched them give the ball to Julius Randle. This brother was dribbling the ball up the damn court.
First team all defense.
I don't know about this, but Brianna just walked in front of me. Are you kidding me?
All right. Back by popular demand, Kenny Ducey, DraftKings contributor, among many other things in the sports media world. Kenny, we got some really positive feedback about your last appearance on the show.
Wow, really?
A couple
weeks ago. Popular demand?
Popular demand.
There was
people are beating down my door saying, bring Kenny Ducey back on the podcast. No, I just had a couple of RotoWire guys who listened to it that said, who is that guy? He was really good. So people liked hearing your takes about the NBA.
That would be a first. Yeah, that's one of my good friends likes to make fun of me. I'm just a take guy. That's my job now. I have to have a take. And last night my take was, hey, the Bucks are gonna win this game, and it was incredibly wrong. And I feel like an idiot for saying that. And let's try to come up with a better take here. How about that?
Yeah, well, the reason I have you on, of course, is to talk Bucks Suns game one. You and I had some good back and forth on the DraftKings show this morning. We covered a lot of the angles. Julian Edlow, another DK guy, threw in some takes as well. But, man, my overarching takeaway was, with Giannis playing in this game, with Giannis putting up a, 20-17, they kept saying on the broadcast, by the way, like, DeAndre Ayton is the first player, was it since Duncan, to have 15-15 in his first finals game. Like, Giannis, this was also his first finals game. He did the same thing. But that's an aside. For as much as the Bucks got out of Giannis, you know, in a game that it looked like they might not have him for at all until like 2 hours before tip off, for them to hit 16 three-pointers in this game, for Chris Middleton, for the most part, to have a really good game. You know, they even got something out of Bryn Forbes late in the second half when they were kind of threatening a few times to trim into that lead. It just felt like the Suns were able to be on cruise control for most of the night, despite playing like a B-plus game. And the Bucks didn't play an A-plus game. They probably didn't even play an A game. But for them to basically have their B plus game and have it be this much, you know, this far behind Phoenix's, if that makes sense, it's a little discouraging heading into game two tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'm definitely very discouraged. I mean, you talked about the three-pointers. 11 of them were in the second half. They shot 50% from three in the second half. All game long, they turned the ball over 13 times to Phoenix's 9. Wasn't like they really got killed there. They played a really good game, all things considered, and that is definitely what's freaking me out about the fact that the Suns kind of blew the doors off them. And I mentioned on the show, but one of the things that really stuck out to me as a spread bettor here is early in the game, they were missing putback tips. They were missing short, just high percentage shots. I mean, Drew Holiday missed a little bit around the rim. So did Giannis. Maybe he did have those highlights and he did look really good for, basically all of us just counting that he wasn't going to play. But they still kind of missed around the rim, and those kind of add up. And I think that's what happened a little bit, is that the Phoenix Suns controlled in the front court. And my thinking going into that game was, okay, well, I don't think like Brook Lopez is amazing, right? But they have a big man and in Brook Lopez, and they have Giannis, who is the center. And they also, Bobby Portis kind of gave them good minutes against a decent Hawks front court in the last couple of games without Giannis. So maybe this is like a better attack against Ayton, than Ivica Zubats and whatever is left of the Clippers front court. It was like Marcus Morris. And, so I thought that maybe, he wouldn't bother them as much, but he did. And I think that was sort of where the game was won for me, was down low. And I think that there's just so much, the Phoenix Suns can shoot so much better. I'm not sure how much better, because they really like didn't shoot that well against the Clippers, but probably a little bit better. And that's sort of the moral of the story here, is how much better can the Bucks play? I don't think it's much. They also played pretty good on defense, but I think that there's real concerns there, and that's sort of where I am after game one. I just kind of feel like this is reassuring myself that the Bucks are not a good team. They are not a well-coached team at all, and they are frauds.
I think that's fair. I don't think they're a great team. I think they're a very good team. I don't think they're the caliber of team that would typically win the finals or typically make it to the finals. Most teams that are shooting 31% from three for the playoffs are eliminated usually in round one, and for sure in round two. They often don't have the benefit of playing the banged up Atlanta Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say the Bucks are frauds, but they're not as good as they were the previous 2 years. I was watching the game with a bunch of friends in Milwaukee last night, and that was something we kept coming back to. Like, man, like the 2018-19 team or the 2019-20 team beats this Suns team. That's what we felt, at least. That they had more weapons. They didn't have more star power necessarily, but they went deeper. Like those Bucks teams almost felt like this Suns team, where you're going to get contributions from Cam Johnson, from Campaign. Even Torrey Craig gave them good minutes on the defensive end. Like it just feels like the Bucks, with Dante DiVincenzo out, with Giannis limited, it just feels like they run out of options really quickly. And this didn't seem like a bad Bud game to me necessarily. In fact, I thought he made pretty much every adjustment that he could. The problem is the adjustments just aren't very good. Like, putting in Bobby Portis for 14 minutes, that's not going to get you that far. Pat Connaughton didn't offer a whole lot in this game, although he did hit two threes. Like, they just don't really have the manpower to make the adjustments that I feel like are sitting right there on paper.
Yeah, I love that. Like, Budenholzer's big adjustment is always just, I'm going to put in Jeff Teague. I'm going to push the Jeff Teague button. And I was watching the game last night with a buddy of mine who's joking, like, you're going to be so mad when he puts in Jeff Teague. And it's true. Like, he just, he's pushing all the buttons that he can right now. And as you mentioned, Bryn Forbes was like one of their best players in that Heat series, which seems so long ago. Remember how well they played against the Heat? And we were all just like, the Bucks, whoever, they might beat the Nets, and if they beat the Nets, they're going to win the finals. But it definitely seemed like he did do a better job. You mentioned that on our show, and I agree. I think that Bud did pretty much everything he could have done. But I guess what it comes back down to for me is, like, I don't trust Chris Middleton to play well every game this series, and I think that's a pretty understandable fear. I think that everyone has seen Chris Middleton be just about as bad as you can be in this postseason. And he's been great. He's had some great games, but he's not going to string together three good games. And my main concern here is, which we didn't really talk about, is Drew Holiday. You mentioned last season, you know, their struggles in the postseason and how this team is not as good. Drew Holiday was supposed to fix that. They had issues on the defensive side. And, you know, I think that there was a lot of thought that, okay, well, Drew Holiday helps. He can be a two-way player for us. And he has not helped really fix the struggles that they had in the backcourt. And also, you know, Chris Paul did a really good job on Drew Holiday last night. He was 0 for 4, 4 for 14, I believe, from the field. You know, Drew was there to make plays for the Bucks, and he did that. And that's sort of what he did in the Hawks series. But they need more scoring. That's just about as easy as you can put it. You know, the meme threes from Brooke Lopez are going to fall. They've fallen in postseasons past. They fell last night. The Bryn Forbes meme threes might fall too, but they need that 25-30 point night from Drew Holiday every time out. And the Phoenix Suns, you know, they were one of the best defenses this year, and I think that we need to give them credit for shutting down Drew Holiday last night. I mean, everyone was talking about Drew Holiday entering last night's game, and after game one, no one is talking about Drew Holiday. And I just think that's a conversation that needs to be had. And I think that he's probably the proverbial X factor that, you know, the Bucks need to get back in the series.
Yeah, Holiday was a minus 16 in his 40 minutes. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. There were, as has been the case in some of his other bad games in these playoffs, he'll have like a 3-minute run where, you know, he finishes something at the rim or he gets a steal on defense and ignites a fast break. But on the whole, it was not great. And you know, he almost had a triple-double, but you need more scoring, especially on a night when Giannis is only playing 35 minutes. It felt like less, honestly. It felt like he was on the bench for really long stretches in this game. I felt like he was more effective in the first half, especially that first quarter. Like, you know, I didn't know if this was going to be an Anthony Davis situation where 20 seconds in, it's like, please get this man off the court. Like, I'm not even comfortable watching this. But I thought he looked really good in the first quarter and still fine in the second half, but maybe was running a little bit low on energy, a little bit rusty after not playing in a week. But again, I feel like if you're Milwaukee, you have to be really encouraged by what you got from Giannis. It just stings a little bit more to take this loss with Giannis playing and playing fairly well.
Yeah. The highlight for me yesterday was Giannis pushing. I mean, it was early, but he shoved DeAndre Ayton and then dunked in his face. And that was sort of what I thought was going to set the tone for the night. I was like, oh, Giannis is here. Giannis is going to have a good game.
Yeah.
And he did. 2017 was good. And I think that as much as we talk about, and this is sort of the same narrative that I was fighting in the Clippers series when my beloved Clippers lost, you know, everyone's going to scream, okay, well, there's, you know, variance and the Suns are going to shoot better than 33% and Devin Booker's not going to go 1 for 8. You know, all that's well and good. And that's true, but Giannis could easily have like a 40-point night in one of these next two games. I mean, you know, there was obviously some concerns there late in the game. You know, he tried to lead them back. They came back. They pushed it to, I believe it was like 7, and then they were, you know, he sort of had those wild possessions when he was like trying to pass out of doubles. And I just think that, you know, he needs to get back into game shape. I know that he did look good, but I think that he's still in a couple games is going to look that much better. Like, he wasn't like going to that spin move that he loves to go to. He wasn't he kind of wasn't seeing the floor as well as I thought he would. So, I mean, I still think that, you know, give him like a game or two and this team might look a little different. But being able to get him out there, I agree, was so big for them. And he's going to be their ticket into this series. But I also sort of, you know, wouldn't mind if, you know, he decided to sort of play the role of distributor a little bit more, because he did, the Bucks did knock down so many threes that if they're, you know, they statistically shoot better at home, and especially Chris Middleton shoots better at home. So if he wants to, you know, pass the ball a little bit more, maybe not to Pat Connaughton, but yeah, I mean, I think that the Bucks certainly, there's a recipe for them to score a little more. It also just is like kind of shocking that their offensive rating last night was 104, considering how many threes they hit.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to like they do need more points out of Giannis down low. That is a big part of their offense, is getting those high percentage looks with him. And he did miss some.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I mean, you mentioned it a couple minutes ago, too. Like in that first half, especially, it felt like there were five times where the Bucks had like a wide open layup and it just somehow rolled out, or they would have three guys, you know, Giannis, Tucker, and Lopez are all fighting for the same tip in, and the ball's just like somehow not going down.
Right.
And I mean, this is a team that they shot well under 50% from 2-point range in this game. And that's very uncharacteristic for as bad of a 3-point shooting team as they've been in the playoffs. They've been able to make up for it by being hyper efficient in the lane. And a lot of those shots that were falling in games 5 and 6 against the Hawks for Lopez were not going down. Bobby Portis missed a couple inside. I remember one Middleton layup that spun around a couple times and went out in the second quarter. And like you said, the Suns did a great job of, whether it was Giannis or Lopez or Porter or even Holiday at times, if somebody jump stopped in the lane or caught the ball deep, they were, you know, guys like Cam Johnson and Torrey Craig and Jay Crowder were coming down to dig those out. And, you know, they show it on the replay and it looked like a couple times, you know, like Holiday got slapped on the wrist and that led to a turnover. But at the end of the day, I was actually okay with how this game was called. A lot of people where I was watching were not happy with the refereeing. Obviously, there was, for part of the game at least, there was a pretty big free throw discrepancy. It ended up being 26 to 16 in terms of attempts, which isn't that crazy. I didn't feel like the Bucks should have more free throw attempts. I felt like there were a couple calls, especially on Booker, that went the Suns' way. But, you know, as someone who's a little bit more of an impartial observer, like, what did you think of the refereeing in game one?
I thought it was fine. I mean, I thought that there were a couple calls. I'm trying to remember. There was one bogus call on, I think on maybe Booker. I don't know. But I mean, I also like, I'm just kind of past the, it wasn't egregious. I don't think, there were that many calls that like, I think that I'm still confused about the whole flagrant one thing with like Brook Lopez landed underneath Chris Paul, because I feel like there's a very clear line between a guy like Zaza Pachulia, right, trying to injure, right? Like he clearly, like I remember the Kawhi play when Kawhi twisted his thing, like he clearly landed and then he pushed his foot out, you know, like that to me is a flagrant, and that's sort of the spirit of the rule. But when you look at last night, I mean, Brook Lopez just, he's tall and lanky and he just went up to contest a jumper and like Chris Paul unfortunately landed on his ankle. I don't understand, or his foot. I don't understand what the problem is with that. And it is funny to me. I was watching at a bar last night, so there's no sound and like the closed captioning was on. And it's just like, you know, watching the referee say this was, you know, for this hostile act. And I'm like, what is hostile about, you know, Brook Lopez? Poor Brook Lopez is trying to jump up and contest a three. But yeah, I mean, I do think that the free throws were a big story in the Clippers series. If you remember, I mean, I think that there were plenty of Suns fans saying that, you know, that they weren't getting enough free throws, and they certainly did last night. But I, you know, that anytime Giannis is involved, I mean, he got 12 free throws last night, and shockingly, that was, you know, they only had 16, they only had four. Other than that, I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot more free throws coming for the Milwaukee Bucks, and there'll also probably be more for Drew Holiday, who is a guy that attacks so well, but again, just sort of lost his way last night. Yep. And they need him to get to the line a little bit more because he is a very good free throw shooter.
Yeah, he's had a few of these games, Holiday, that is, in these playoffs where it's just so frustrating to watch. I mean, it really is like a Bledsoe redux where you're just like, how is he playing? Yep. Like, how is he taking these shots? You know, it's not like he just had an off night and, you know, was getting to the rim and things weren't falling or he wasn't getting calls. Like, I mean, it's clanking, you know, contested pull-up twos or, you know, pulling up for three with 20 seconds on the shot clock. You know, it's just very, like, just low basketball IQ plays from a guy who pretty much everyone universally agrees has a crazy high basketball IQ. That's what's so frustrating. Like, with Bledsoe, is like, this is what we expected. You know, like, you couldn't, you're fooling yourself if you said, like, I can't believe Eric Bledsoe played like this, because that's what he was. But
I mean, I've long been an Eric Bledsoe stan. He was one of my favorite 2K players, but continue.
Of course. He's actually a much, much more valuable 2K asset than he's ever been in the NBA. Yeah. Loved him at Kentucky as well. But with Holiday, he's had this entire career of building up this reputation as a high IQ player. He's super steady. You know, he's maybe never going to give you the 45 point game, but he's also just never going to bottom out. And it feels like he's bottomed out a few times at some really, really key junctures for the Bucks. And, you know, if he plays better, I still think Phoenix wins this game. Like, Paul and Booker were just so good knocking down shots whenever they needed to, essentially, especially late in this game to close it out. But man, it was a pretty big step back for Holiday, who I thought played really well at the end of the Hawks series.
Yeah, he did. Those 26 points per game, like, that was the biggest reason why the Bucks were able to get into that series or to close out that series in the fashion that they did. I will also say that, you know, I mentioned it, but, you know, the 9 assists and 7 rebounds for me was big, because I think that was a sort of a big step forward for Holiday in that Atlanta series, he really started to rack up the assists and the rebounds. With Giannis out, there were a lot of rebounds available, and he was so big for them. I mean, you know, how big is it really to have a rebounding advantage? But still, I mean, you know, the assists were probably the bigger thing. He was really good at helping the Bucks have a more imaginative offense, because they really had an unimaginative offense with, you know, Giannis healthy and with Chris Middleton just, you know, basically taking turnaround jumpers like he thinks he's Kevin Durant every single possession. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of, you mentioned the you know, the Bledsoe redux. It definitely felt like that a lot. And I also just think, like, he'll be back in this series, but he's sort of, to me, like, the numbers would sort of point to the fact that, like, he has been decently consistent in the scoring department. But to me, his biggest performance was in Game 7 against the Brooklyn Nets. And he was 5 of 23 in that game for 13 yep. points. So you're going to call me crazy for saying that, but he did have, which sounds ridiculous, like one of two buckets in overtime. And he led them down the stretch in that game. You know, he had some huge shots and some huge makes. He helped them get to that point, you know, to get to overtime and then to win. And I just think that he's been the guy that when the Bucks have needed him has shown up. And I sort of expected when they cut it to 7, I said, okay, well, maybe Holiday here just starts to get into his bag, because that's what he's done all postseason. And he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But I sort of think that that's what the, you know, maybe they can deal without him being, you know, consistently there throughout the night scoring, but they're going to need him late in the game. They're going to need that other guy to be a closer, because you remember the articles that were written after Chris Middleton had that game winning shot against the Heat, and everyone was like, oh, he's their closer. You know, it's an unlikely closer. He's not their best player, because he hit one flipping shot. No, I think Drew Holiday.
Wow, watch your language, man.
Is the closer for my mother loves to say flipping. So it's part of my vocabulary really steadily. But yeah, I think that basically Drew Holiday has to be the closer for the Milwaukee Bucks, because we know that Giannis is going to draw the double down the stretch. It happened last night. And when that happened, there was really nothing he could do. You know, he was just kind of making wild passes in the air, which is like a cardinal sin of basketball.
So I've been trying to get a handle on this Bucks team's identity throughout the playoffs. It's swung dramatically. But I've settled on the fact that I just do not trust this team. I don't think they're a very resilient team. You know, you think of some of the great teams that we've had just in the last decade. I'm talking all-time great teams, like those Heat teams, the Warriors for sure. If those teams were trailing by 15, even in a playoff game against a good opponent, you always thought, like, they're coming back. The lead is never safe. I don't get that sense from the Bucks at all. And maybe that's more of a testament to how well, you know, Phoenix played last night. It just felt like Milwaukee was never able to string together, like, a score, stop, score. It was always like score, score, yep. or get a stop and then don't score. Like they were just trading buckets, essentially.
Right.
They had it down at the 7:16 mark. Giannis lays one in. They have the lead down to 7. At any point watching this game, again, as somebody who's a little more impartial than I am, did you feel like, whoa, the Bucks are going to come back and win this? Or were you pretty confident that Phoenix would hold them off yet again?
Yeah, it didn't resemble, you know, the Clippers game 6 against the Jazz like that. It didn't feel like there was an overwhelming amount of momentum. And I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that the Bucks are playing on the road. I just think that, like you said, I mean, the Suns are a disciplined team. They know where their strengths lie, and they have, you know, great shooters. Cam Johnson stepped up last night with Saric out, and we haven't even talked about Saric, but I mean, I sort of feel like that injury is huge for the Suns. I think that they're going to be way better now, not running Dario Saric out there for big minutes. You know, Cam Johnson is better, I think, than Dario Saric. You know, the Torrey Craig thing is another story. He was a minus 10 last night, but, I think that I was not worried at all I was worried the whole time, I should say, because I didn't think the Bucks were going to win. And I just, like you said, again, they can get those high percentage looks with Ayton, and that's what helped them really. I mean, they had a couple of timely shots from the perimeter, but in the end, it was really DeAndre Ayton just, you know, getting in his bag down low, scoring in the post. And that's what they were able to use to lift themselves back out of those holes and fend off the Bucks. But again, also, you know, we saw at the end of games that were close in that Brooklyn series and even in the Atlanta series, I mentioned that unimaginative offense, and we talked about it on the podcast last time, but they just, I feel like when they get close in these games, they sort of panic, and it's, they sort of rely on Giannis to save them. And last night, you know, he just was lost passing out of doubles and trying to finish through contact and just not doing a good job of it. But he sort of is just a guy that, maybe I don't want to like use that the cliche of like the moment's too big, because I don't think that that's the case. But I just sort of feel like when the other team can sense when the offense is all on Giannis's shoulders, and it's pretty easy to just say, well, we're just going to not let him beat us, and we're going to let, you know, Bobby Portis shoot from outside. And it worked. It worked for the Suns. And I think that they're just going to continue to focus all the attention on Giannis. And I don't know if the Bucks role players are really good enough to save them.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So we talked about finals MVP a couple weeks ago when you were on the pod. And at that point, I think we were like midway through Clippers Suns, and Bucks Hawks was maybe just getting underway at that point. We talked at the time about Chris Paul, and, you know, if the Suns got to this point, how I think we were both on the same page in that unless Devin Booker or I guess DeAndre Ayton, you know, like the gap in statistics would have to be so massive for one of those guys to win finals MVP. And after one game, I feel more strongly that this is going to be Chris Paul's finals MVP than I had at any other point in the playoffs.
Really? I mean, I think that it's the coronavirus has left his system. He's playing better. He looks like himself again, two games in a row now. Mm-hmm. But I still am really tempted by DeAndre Ayton plus 1,000. I think that DeAndre Ayton was probably the biggest reason why they won last night. And I think that we've seen a lot. Look, it's as sad as it is to talk about this, like, The finals MVP is very narrative driven, and that's why we were saying, okay, well, Chris Paul, you know, that when, at the time, what was he like, plus 400 or something? We were like, this is a great bet, or you were like, this is a great bet, and I was like, I agree. But the narrative for like DeAndre Ayton has so much momentum in the coverage of the Phoenix Suns this postseason, I feel like a lot of people are talking about, you know, this breakout performance from him this postseason, and to me, like, first of all, Devin Booker at plus 300. I don't have any interest because he sort of has taken a backseat not only to Chris Paul, but now DeAndre Ayton. But I sort of feel like his odds are still a little too long here. You know, why are we making Chris Middleton plus 700 and DeAndre Ayton plus 1,000? I mean, the odds would very clearly indicate, right, that the Bucks are, well, first of all, the Bucks aren't going to win the finals, but Giannis at plus 600, you know, the odds, I'm looking at DraftKings, but, you know, the odds sort of would just indicate, right, that they're basically counting out the Milwaukee Bucks from these finals MVP odds. So I feel like DeAndre Ayton is probably like the second most important player for them right now, and could easily, you know, levitate to the, or I don't know,
grow or move up, or I don't know what you want to, what adjective verb you want to use, but I think he could easily vault into the, the favorite.
I think that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, there you go. Vault to the most important player on the floor. And just think about it, right? We talked a lot about Drew Holiday and how he's important, but who is the most important player to stop on the Milwaukee Bucks? It's their center, Giannis Antetokounmpo. He is a center. And what did we see early in game one? We saw DeAndre Ayton checking Giannis on the perimeter. And I think that that's something that they're just going to put DeAndre Ayton on Giannis. And they can do that because they know they're not, this isn't going to pull up. And DeAndre Ayton has a decent amount of, you know, of horizontal movement. He's good enough on his feet that he can, you know, hang with Giannis if he tries to go to the rim, but he doesn't have to worry about a jump shot. So I think that he's going to be guarding Giannis, and I think that he'll do a decent enough job here to really warrant consideration for this award. I had mentioned before the series that I liked his odds. I think they were pretty similar to what they are now. Maybe he was like, you know, plus 1500 or something, but come on, man. I mean, if you want to make a bet on Finals MVP, I'm definitely taking DeAndre Ayton. I'm not taking Chris Paul minus 143. I'm certainly not taking Devin Booker. Devin Booker, no one's talking about it, but he hasn't looked as good after the nose injury. He really just hasn't looked like himself ever since that big game one. And then he got headbutted by Pat Bev. He hasn't really been explosive for them. DeAndre Ayton's a value play.
He's definitely the value play. I'm just talking who I think is going to win it and who I think probably should win it.
I still think it's Ayton. I really do.
Well, I mean, I just feel like the Chris Paul narrative is so strong, right? Like it's competing narratives. Like the Ayton narrative is great. I think in a normal year, you know, this upstart, you know, I think Bam Adebayo had a lot of that same momentum going into last year's finals. And of course the Heat losing the series, you know, knocked him out of contention, but it does feel kind of similar where a lot of people are starting to recognize like, hey, this guy's way more important for this team than maybe we thought he was. And it's kind of built and built with each passing round. So I don't think you're wrong about it. I just think the Chris Paul narrative is like a career long narrative like this. I just think so many people, especially the type of people who vote for this award, we called it a lifetime achievement finals MVP. I feel like that's exactly how it's going to go.
It could be. It could be a lifetime achievement award. And, you know, to your point, you know, which I mentioned, like it is a very narrative driven thing. And like, it doesn't really necessarily matter if Chris Paul is the best player on the floor or the most important player on the floor. I mean, they might just give it to him to be nice. But it's, yeah, I mean, certainly he's the favorite for reason. And I do think that there's a very good chance that he wins finals MVP. I am just a little bit worried about, you know, he's still not like making those mid-range jumpers as automatically as he normally does. I still think he's prone to having a bad game or two in this series. And you know, that's my only thinking with Ayton is like, I just feel like he's just been the model of consistency for this team. He's been rock solid. But you know, any of these guys really are capable of blowing it and having bad games. And Devin Booker, frankly, I mean, we know that he's one of the most talented scorers in this league. He could easily put together, you know, 3 40-point games in a row and take finals MVP from Chris Paul. But it is a good story. You know, I am happy that Chris Paul is in this position that even I held my breath when he rolled his ankle. I was like, is this happening again for Chris Paul? But it is nice to see. He deserves this, and he'll certainly deserve finals MVP when he wins it.
Last thing on this series, would winning the title, finishing off this run, even in a weird season, like would that definitively change how you think about specifically Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton? I think it's been well discussed what this would mean for Chris Paul, but you know, I think to like what the 2016 finals meant for Kyrie. You know, I think that was kind of the official coronation of Kyrie Irving is now on another level as a player, and you know how it's gone since then has. Yeah, I don't know that he's officially kind of elevated himself, but Devin Booker, I feel like specifically is in that same position where, you know, he's a lot of the credit if they finish this off is going to go to Chris Paul. A lot of it's going to go to Ayton. But at the end of the day, Booker is still the centerpiece of this team. And it looks like it's going to be that way for the foreseeable future. Like, I think for guys that are young, you know, in your mid to low 20s, like Booker is, like to get this early in your career. And it was the same story for Kyrie. To kind of just get that off your back early on is so big. You're kind of playing with house money the rest of the way. You're never at risk of having your own Chris Paul narrative where you're 15 years in and you still haven't won a title and people are starting to feel bad for you. But does it change like how you view him as a player at all?
It changes a little bit, but I, you know, I'm just looking now. I mean, Can you guess how many times he's hit more than 1-3 since the beginning of the Clippers series?
I'm gonna say once.
It was twice. He hit three threes in the first game of that series, or that series when he scored 40 points, and then in game five he hit four triples. He had 31 points. He's sort of underwhelmed me this postseason. He's had those two incredible games. I think that, you know, there was that he had undeniable momentum coming out of that Lakers series with that closeout game, and everyone, you know, saying, wow, closeout game Devin Booker. And then, of course, he had a decent closeout game against the Nuggets, although no one really cared because, like, you know, the Nuggets didn't have Jamal Murray. They were not expected to win that series. And closeout game against the Clippers was pretty bad. But I still think that, you know, I want to see something else from him in the finals. I think that we will. I think that we'll see a really good game from him. But I think that he still has to do something in the NBA Finals for me to be like, okay, well, yeah, this guy's really taking the next step. Because he still does feel like the second fiddle to Chris Paul. And to me, mm-hmm. I still think that it's changed the way that we've all thought about DeAndre Ayton. You know, he went down in the scoring department this year. I think that he has a lot more pressure on him as a former number one pick and now in his third season to kind of prove it. I mean, he's still developing a lot. But he really that's been the overwhelming, you know, storyline for me, is how well DeAndre Ayton's played. I know I've talked about it a lot, and I'll shut my mouth about it. But he's really just given them a lot on the defensive end. And then when you look over the last four games, I mean, the rebounding has just been absolutely incredible to just completely swing the momentum in that Clippers series. You know, he's averaged 17 rebounds in the last four games, and he's, again, given them that consistent option when their shooting just has completely struggled. And to me, Booker just hasn't really shot the ball that well. I'm willing to give him an excuse because he got hurt, but I still think that, like, we need to see him win a game by himself in this series, and then we can give. I mean, Kyrie, I think it's a fair comparison, but when you think about how well Kyrie Irving played in that postseason, really for two postseasons, mm-hmm. remember when he went down in game one against the Warriors? Like, that was, we were like, well, man, the series is over. Like, that, you know, that was a devastating injury for them when it broke his kneecap or whatever. I mean, it was yep. devastating in general, but, you know, for the Cavs, like, to me, if Devin Booker went down with an injury, I still feel like the Suns would win. And that's probably a little bit because the Bucks, I don't trust them, but I still think they could make up the contributions and win a seven game series. It would be hard, but anyway, I still think that he's a good player and he is the future of this team. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but I don't think he's elevated himself to like Kyrie in the finals quite yet. I mean, that guy was putting up 40 point nights like every night with LeBron. He was a scoring machine in that series. And to me, Devin Booker just hasn't really been there yet. And he could. He's got all the talent in the world, but not yet.
All right, we got a little bit of time. You have a Mets-Brewers game to get to this afternoon. But 2021-22 NBA MVP odds are finally up at the DraftKings Sportsbook. I believe these were just added on Wednesday morning. I want to get your take on a few of these guys. There's a long list here, like 50-plus guys who are eligible to be wagered on the DraftKings Sportsbook. But as we know, in most years, it's usually going to be, you know, one of the top at least like 10 guys in terms of preseason odds. It's a deep field, though. I mean, there's a ton of top-end talent in the league right now. But I want to get your take. We have Luka Doncic, who's number one in the odds. He's at plus 450. I'm not going to read all the numbers, but in order of most likely to win MVP, we have Doncic, Embiid, Durant, Giannis, Curry, LeBron, Lillard, Jokic, Devin Booker, and James Harden. That's your top 10. And any of the numbers, I assume you have this up on your end as well. Do any of these numbers stand out to you as really appealing?
I'm actually trying to find it because I can't find it. But I so yeah, I actually wanted to see the numbers really quick. I'm looking for them now.
Okay. Well, while you do that, I'll read them off. So we have Doncic at plus 450, Embiid at 7-1, Durant plus 725, Giannis plus 750, Curry plus 750, LeBron 11-1, Lillard 11-1, Jokic 15-1, Booker 18-1, Harden 20-1.
So I see something now, but yeah. So what stood out to me when you read it to me I think we're looking at the same article now, is Steph Curry at +750. And I was just I don't know why, but I was watching like some Klay Thompson highlights yesterday. I don't know. It might have come up on Twitter or something. But I totally forgot about Klay Thompson. I'll be completely honest.
And it's been 2 years.
Yeah. Look, the Warriors are going to be really good next year. They're going to be really good. The return of Klay Thompson. I mean, look at how good they were this year. They almost made the playoffs. I mean, I guess they did technically if you want to count the play-in tournament. And they didn't have – I mean, it was just Curry. That was it. That was their whole team. Getting Klay Thompson back is going to be giant for them. Wiggins had a fantastic year. Like, they've quietly built a really good team when they haven't really been contending for the last 2 years. I still think, like, that Damian Lee is a really good role player. I know that I will probably get made fun of for saying that, and I just still don't think he's just on the team because he is an in-law of Steph Curry's. I think that they have,
I'm not convinced of that, but continue.
I just think they have a good bench, and I think that they have – like good young talent. James Wiseman, I'm also like sort of not sold on him, but they could trade him for someone really good. I've been, you know, there's been rumors that they might trade James Wiseman to get another star. I mean, they're sort of in the driver's seat right now to me, to have like a top three finish in the West. I think that, you know, as well as some of these other teams played at times, like the Nuggets and the Suns, I mean, we saw like the West was still very much up for grabs. We saw that the Utah Jazz weren't the powerhouse that we thought they were going to be earlier in the season. We saw that LeBron is a little older. I think that the West is just up for grabs at this point. It reminds you of like the East 6 years ago. And to me, to get a former unanimous MVP, two-time MVP, +750, I think that's basically a bet on the Warriors being really good next year. If the Warriors are really good, I think that Curry is going to – I think that he unlocked something this year. I think that he's been a more daring shot taker. You know, he can be a very good shot maker from anywhere. And I think that, you know, with this sort of renewed confidence in himself, I think that he could have a fantastic year. He quietly was really good again this year. And I know that it's not, like, daring to say a +750, you know, the guy with the third best odds is going to win. But – if I'm looking up there, I think that that's what I'm most excited about. And maybe Dame at +1100, but I also have a lot of, I mean, it depends on if he gets traded. Like if Damian Lillard got traded to the Knicks, first of all, you know, I wouldn't be on this podcast. I'd be on like a 2 week bender. But number two, Damian Lillard also would probably win MVP because I think that that team around him would be good enough. The system would be good enough where, he would elevate that team from like fourth in the East to maybe like second, and then maybe they win a playoff series and, mm-hmm. you know, people recognize how valuable he is. But yeah, that's where I'm at. I think Steph Curry, I think the Warriors are going to have a really good season. That's my big take.
Everything you said about Steph is spot on. I'm with you there. I think this is an appealing number and one that, you know, is probably going to come down as we get closer to the season and once the season starts. Lillard is the other guy I wanted to highlight, and there's a couple more that I'll get to real quickly, but I think a trade out of Portland would just kind of reset everything for him. Like, I just don't think he can win it in Portland. I think he's like kind of maxed out statistically. And that team is kind of maxed out with what they can do. But I think he could have like the same statistical season somewhere else, but the narrative would change. You know, it would be probably a more fun scenario, especially if it were a team like the Knicks where the guard would be going crazy every night. He would just be this even bigger star than he already is. And I don't think he would even need to go a level up in terms of how he's playing. I just think the narrative around him would again, it would reset. It would just be a new phase of Damian Lillard's career, and everybody would be really excited about it. And I think he could kind of ride that wave. So I think Lillard at 11-1 makes a lot of sense. How about the guy who just dominated the NBA this entire season and never gets hurt and never misses games at 15-1?
Yeah, that's crazy. It
15
really
to one. I mean, I don't think, like, if I had to predict who wins the MVP regardless of odds, I wouldn't predict that he repeats, but I mean, he's been extremely consistent throughout these last few years. He took things to another level this past year. They're going to be without their second best player for most of the season. Like, there is a path where the Nuggets are a top four team again. Jokic is a little bit better than he was last year, and he rides the no Murray, we're still a good team narrative to a second straight MVP. I mean, 15-1.
That's insane. It really is. You would think that the former MVP would be lower than that. I really like Kawhi Leonard +2500. If we're going to talk about guys in the West, I mean, he's the opposite because he misses a lot of time. But I still feel like plus 25. Look, this is not – Kawhi Leonard is not in a – like, there's a huge problem in the NBA right now because Kristaps Porzingis obviously had all those knee issues, right? And he missed like 2 years with a torn ACL. And then Kevin Durant, same thing. But those are those are like the last two, I feel like, big knee injuries that like kept stars out. And if you think about it, they didn't need either. Like the Mavericks were punting a couple years ago. They were like ready to contend this year. The Nets also, in a bigger way, were punting when Kevin Durant was hurt. They were like, okay, well, you know, we're gonna wait to contend anyway. Like we gotta still, you know, build the rest of our team out. Obviously, you know, they had some sort of trade in their mind. And I feel like Kawhi Leonard is definitely going to play next year, as in my medical opinion, because there's no reason for him to just sit a year. It's not like he's on a team like the Warriors where, you know, they have some sort of long-term plan. He might not even play for the Clippers next year. But to me, this postseason sort of reminded me like how good Kawhi Leonard is. Like he is absolutely one of the three best players in the world. I have no problem saying that. I have no problem taking flack if people don't agree with me. I really do feel like that. And I think that all season long, he really just managed his minutes. He didn't really play at all this season because they were getting ready for the postseason. Still managed to put up good numbers. And I sort of feel like he might come out with a vengeance next year, maybe after this whole Clippers situation, if there really is some sort of issue with him and the medical staff. I mean, you talk about Jokic being ridiculous that he's plus 1,500 considering how good he was this year and how he's also one of the three best players in the world. I think you got to also put Kawhi Leonard up there at kind of ridiculous odds at plus 2,500. I think a lot of the injuries baked in there, and I know that there's a lot working against him, but come on. I mean, his talent is absolutely insane. To me, he still is capable of being one of the best players in the world. It's just a matter of his situation next year. It might be a wait-and-see approach, sort of like the Damian Lillard thing, but that is sort of ridiculous to me. I'm also looking at Anthony Davis at plus 2,500 as well.
You know where I stand on Kawhi. I think he has a torn ACL, and he's going to miss most, if not all, of next season.
But that's not an injury. That's my point. That's not an injury that needs to keep him out for a year. That's if they're being super cautious.
And he's not going to win MVP if he comes back at the All-Star break.
But he needs like maybe 5 months to rehab that. I don't feel like that's an injury that necessarily has to leak into next year. I mean, we also don't know if it's a torn ACL. He might have just had a partial tear or something. Go ahead, though. Yeah,
we'll see.
That's right, man.
Trae Young at 25-1 is interesting. I heard you decrying Trae Young on the DK show when I first joined the call. I'm not a huge Trae Young guy, but I feel like people really like Trae Young now after these playoffs. I'm not sure if that's a correct opinion.
But if
the Hawks kind of pick up where they left off and they're surprisingly better next season, and one of these top three teams in the East has an injury, or the Sixers take a big step back, and all of a sudden the Hawks are the three seed and Trae's averaging 30 points per game and 9 assists. I mean, there's a path there. I think multiple guys would have to like take themselves out of the race ahead of him. Like it's pretty hard for me to say like Trae Young's going to have a definitively better season than Nikola Jokic or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry.
Right.
And if two of those three guys get hurt, maybe something opens up, but there's a reason he's 25-1. It just feels like there was a pretty big upswell of Trae Young momentum coming out of these playoffs.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that what you said at the end of that statement, though, is the most important thing. I mean, I think we're fooling ourselves if we say Trae Young is going to be, you know, going to outshine Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, who we haven't even talked about, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, like anybody from the Nets, anybody from the Warriors. I think that, like, he might end up being a top 10 player this year. I think that's a pretty realistic expectation. I think that would also be like a really good achievement for him if he was one of the top 10 players in the NBA. He can get there. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, I think that this guy sort of gets romanticized a little bit. I mean, this is a 34% three-point shooter for his career. It's also a guy that took sort of a step back this year scoring the basketball. And I know that he's scored fewer points. I believe he took fewer threes as well. By three per game.
More free throws, fewer threes. Margin.
He changed the way he played in the postseason. But yeah, I decried him because I don't think that he is that good. I really don't. I think that he has the ability to be that good. And I think that he transformed himself into a great playmaker this postseason. You know, he was really important to them. He also obviously has like that automatic floater or whatever. But watching him just brick threes has really got me wondering how, you know, how, if he can win a, you know, an MVP, like at least this young and this early in his career. I think that people think he's like Steph Curry because he can hit those types of shots. And as we know, the NBA is just consumed on highlights on the Bleacher Report app. So you just get a push notification that Kevin Durant had a dunk and that's all you need to know about the day. Yep. And I think that he has, you know, those ridiculous games and those ridiculous shots, but like the whole body of work for me just isn't impressive enough. The Hawks, though, I think they're legit. So that is one thing working for him. I do think that the Hawks are going to play really well again this year, make the playoffs, and that could certainly lead to him winning MVP. But I don't know if it's – I mean, I'd rather have – like, I feel like, you know, John Collins or DeAndre Hunter would maybe have a better shot. I think that they could take huge steps forward next year.
All right. Well, somebody's running a weed whacker or some sort of outdoor appliance right outside my window. So this is a good time to
cut
it off.
I'm glad that you called it a weed whacker. I have been – I saw some sort of debate on Twitter that some people call it a weed eater, and I just came from Georgia, and that is – I confirm that some people do call it a weed eater. Not really sure what's going on with that. Glad you're a normal person and call it a weed whacker. Curious how the listeners here define that tool.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's still listening this deep into the pod, please, we implore you, let us know on Twitter. I almost feel like I use those interchangeably, but I would definitely say weed whacker first.
It doesn't eat weed. If it was like a lawnmower with a bag, it would eat weeds, but it doesn't eat, it just whacks them.
It definitely does whack them, yeah. Yeah, I've heard some people around here call it a string trimmer. That's just like a little too proper.
That sounds like a British term, a string trimmer.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not going to fly in southeastern Wisconsin. But I know you got to run. Kenny, appreciate the time. As always, we'll talk soon.
Good to be with you, Nick. Thanks for having me on and really looking forward to the next time we can do this.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.